This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm resisting the temptation to go live to Joe Biden speaking at a Kamala Harris rally. It's a very, very strange world we live in. I think we'll get to that in this hour, but how could we delay our favorite guest? It's Tyrus.
You're becoming like my most stable relationship.
Enough said.
Do you hear that, Tyrus? You're a favorite guest.
Yeah, I heard that.
Good. I just want you to know.
I want that in my intro from now on.
Yes, I want to be in your intro on the Annie Fry Show. That would be great. Tyrus, I got to ask you, and this wasn't even part of the plan here, but I was thinking back to when you were here in St. Louis doing, was that your first stand-up show when you were here in Edwardsville?
First, like, me stand-up show, yeah.
First solo stand-up show, right? Yeah?
Yeah, just me. Yeah, I had snuck into some improv under assumed names. Like, joking around, but that was like the show, my first show that I put together, yeah.
you really? You did pseudonyms to get into the clubs a couple times?
Yeah, I would always go by Richard King.
People would be like, oh man, I love Richard King. I want to go
see
that guy.
Did. So I saw, but it was just like one of those fun things because I was always told, you know, being a big guy, you're too intimidating to do comedy. And I always thought that was weird, but funny's funny. Doesn't matter what it comes out of, as long as it's funny.
So my question for you was, based on, you know, the way that you felt that night, I don't know if you remember how you were feeling going into the night, but is it more nervous to go do an event like that where you're live on stage, or is it harder to do TV?
You know, that's a great question. You don't get the same fear in front of the camera. Like live events, wrestling, stand-up, playing football, there's the butterflies because it's on you. There's no, you can't lean on anybody else. If something goes wrong in front of you, it's on you. So there's definitely more of a hype-ness to it. I don't want to call it a fear. It's like, I always had a rule, if you don't have butterflies when you're getting ready to step out on stage or wherever you're going, then you probably shouldn't do it because it means you're invested, you're excited, and you're ready to go. So TV, at first, once you get used to the camera, it doesn't exist anymore. You just kind of, it's a conversation. I mean, I've been picking on Greg for almost 10 years now, so it's pretty easy. I don't want to say easy because you got to be prepared, and you're one bad joke away from not being on TV anymore. So the level of preparedness is a little more tight because you only speak, I speak on average a minute each segment. So you really only hear from me a little bit. So it's a little bit be concise and have more time to think while other people are talking, especially when people take your ideas. You get four people with the same article. A lot of times they're going to have the same thing. So I always try to find things that no one else is talking about or looking at from a different perspective. So there's ups and downs to both sides, but preparation is the same.
Yeah, you're really good at that, finding the angle. I think that's one of the reasons that we've always enjoyed having you on because we, you know, we'll bring up a political topic with you. We don't exactly know where you're going to go with it. And as far as jokes go, being on Gutfeld and everywhere else, I would think, now this is just based on my perception of when I watch you on TV, that you're trying to live in that spot where, yeah, you're one bad joke away from not being on TV anymore, but you got to get real close to it, right?
Yeah, I'm a habitual line stepper,
yeah.
as Greg would tell me. Like, I push the envelope, but it's in a way that, to more make you think. I'm not trying to say something to make everyone go, oh, because I also understand after you watch me, you're trying to go to sleep. So I want you to be in a good mood when you go to sleep. I don't want you to be like, I got to watch six more hours of TV because I can't believe what all the stuff I'm hearing is on Gutso. So our role, I think, or at least my role, is to make you think and then send you to your room happy. That's the plan. So you always want to, but the best way to do that is being prepared. And the same thing is, I don't have to rehearse. I don't have any writers. No one writes jokes for me. So everything I'm kind of out there on TV is I'm just reacting to the room. So I have all the information in my head, but and then I look at everyone else's answers, and I usually don't know what I'm going to say until they go, hey, Tyrus. And then I'll just kind of go from there. Greg never has a clue what I'm going to say. I don't meet with him. I don't share thoughts, any of that stuff. I'm like, I'll see you out there, kid. Like we say in wrestling, we'll call it out there. And that's a good way because it keeps me on my toes. It's almost like a competition in a good, healthy way because everyone's trying to bring something to the table that nobody else is. And I think that's probably why we're so successful is that we don't share stuff because everyone, you can't have an easy night off because we're all trying to win the night, you know, in terms of doing the best job that you can do. And it's a healthy, positive competition.
Yeah, it always stays fresh. We do the same thing here and much
doesn't
more.
Get stale, yeah.
Yeah.
If everyone was given a script, I don't think we'd last very long.
Right, and my role is typically exactly what you described of just coming in and reacting. But it's weird because
you're the adult in the room.
No, I'm the exact opposite, according to Annie. But you're right. I'm going to go with you here.
You're the adult.
I'm the adult in the room, and I got to bring it back down because Annie gets off trail a lot, you know?
Oh, she gets wild. I mean, she's
all
trying to talk about baseball, and we're trying to talk about politics.
I know. Man. We're trying to talk about important stuff, and then she's like, hey, what about the Cardinals? And it's like,
or the Blues, or making fun of my baseball team. She's kind of a bully. She's not listening to this, right? We're good.
No, and she will not. This will be a struck from the podcast
just,
as well.
It's just you and me. Okay, cool.
Actually, we're just going to go off the air completely and just have a private conversation about Annie, if that's cool. But yeah, today I had to be all prepared. It's like so boring because I got to prepare so much. But it's weird because you do have to, you almost have to over-prepare for the role that you're in because you have to be ready for anything. You don't drive the ship, so you got to be ready to roll with whatever.
Yeah, because it's not the Tyra show. So whenever he throws something out there, it's my job either bring it back down to earth or say something that makes him lose his mind. And I kind of juggle between that. Because I never know how I'm on a subject either. Like, I think I'm going to be funny about it. And there's times when I'll have a joke in my head that will pop up, but then as I'm listening to the content, I'm like, you know what? I think we need some levity here. So let's put the joke in the bag and let's have some levity, especially with a lot of the talk about stolen valor stuff and what we're seeing with saying one thing but doing another. And I think sometimes there needs to be a point where you're like, this we don't need to be funny about. This we need to be, give us our best, you give your best educated opinion to it and you just kind of let the chips fall. And I think I've done a pretty good job of balancing that. You also need to understand there's a reason why Brett Baer is where he is. They don't need me to be Brett Baer. They need to be Tyra. So I just talk to, like, if we were sitting having lunch or having a beer somewhere, that's how I do my show.
Hey, I'd be fine, though, if you wanted to moderate the next debate, regardless.
Oh, I'd be all about that. Oh, yeah, because I would ask some fun questions.
Heck, yeah. Tyrus, I got to ask you, a couple of just current event questions, because I'm watching Joe Biden up giving really his first speech in a month. Kamala Harris is with him. It's the first time they've been together. We were just talking off air. Do you think this is a good strategy, them kind of getting back together?
I think their entire strategy is they're hoping that Trump does enough to get people to not vote for him. So whether they are together, they also have really, really just banked on the basement campaign because I think that blueprint in their minds worked. The difference is there's no pandemic anymore. People have more information than they ever did. And the American people are feeling the pinch and trying. I think they try to distance themselves. It's not working. So maybe if they make appearances together, I just don't understand why she wouldn't want to get out and answer questions with reporters unless she is who we thought she was. And this was the same, which is funny because Biden's team was the ones who were trying to think about getting her out of the VP spot. That they were going to offer her a position. I hope she ran for senator or I even heard stuff about Supreme Court pick possibly. They were trying to bribe her out. They didn't think they could win with her. And luckily for Kamala and her team, he had the debate with Trump where Trump ended a 50-year career in one evening.
Yeah, it was remarkable to watch because I know people who skipped that debate because they said, no, I know who I'm voting for. I said, no, you just missed watching a historic moment. I mean, that's a moment in American history now.
Where that administration was exposed to lying to the American people and covering up, which I don't understand how people making decisions who are not elected in that position how that's not some form of law being broken. It's just crazy to me.
Does that matter to you, and does it matter to voters, that Kamala Harris was clearly, she knew how bad he had gotten, and she was part of the cover-up too, but now she's the candidate? You know, is that something you dwell on now?
You know what? I think we're giving her too much credit. I think she was just told what to do, what to say, where to be. She's always unprepared, unorganized. So I don't think she was a part of the loop at all. I don't think she was the last person in the room. I think she was the first one asked to leave.
Tyrus, I know you guys have talked about this subject quite a bit. I said yesterday on this show that, the Kamala laugh thing is a big subject. To me, I don't even care. It's not that, her laugh bothers me. It's that she uses it because she doesn't really know what she's saying, and she's using
it as
filler.
A nervous laugh. It's like a tick. A nervous laugh.
And so that does bother
someone's
me.
Someone's lying to you and they start laughing, it's a tick. Their conscience is telling on them. But again, I think those are no-win arguments for Republicans, whether the black or not black thing, waste of time, stupid. Her laugh, stupid. All we should be talking about, and it's economy, stupid. That's it. Economy, the border. That's all we should be talking about on the Republican side. Policy, policy, policy. Here's our plan. Here's what we're going to do. I mean, even at this point, mentioning her name, I think, would be a better campaign strategy. Be like, listen, I'm not mentioning her until she speaks. So do an interview, then we'll this a campaign. Right now, it's the same thing. So, but again, I'm not on the campaign strategy team. But I think stick to policy. You got a shot. But again, you just don't know in this country right now. We have a cultural war going on, a rejection of the culture that is America, and one side's fighting like hell to hold on to it, and the other side wants basically a socialist country. So it's a lot of strange going on right now.
Do you feel it, Tyrus? I mean, you're in the same world as we are, much higher level, of course, that you're involved in talking about politics. You're talking about the power structure of the country. And there's a real concern right now over the future of America. Are people bringing that to you when you talk to them personally? Are they nervous?
So I guess technically I'm a celebrity when I'm on TV, but when I'm not, I'm just a regular guy. I'm a dad who's sitting at horseback riding practice or baseball practice or whatever's going on, talking to the other dads and moms about the same things. Now people come to me and ask me for answers, and I'm like, listen, I don't have them. I said, I have a little more information than you because I'm closer to it, but here's what I think. Here's what I feel. And the conversations always comes back to money. It always comes back to money. The inflation, how bad it's hurting everybody. Education, how the school systems are failing. Children, you got your kids coming home with straight A's in the eighth grade, but has a third grade reading level. There's a problem with that. More emphasis is made on keeping secrets from parents than working with parents. There's a problem with that. So that's what I hear about mostly. And then, of course, a lot of because my daughters are athletes, and there's a lot of talk about the concerns about this continuing thing where mediocre male athletes all of a sudden transition and are taking women's spots and opportunities and medals away. And I hear that, that's on the minds of a lot of parents. And I don't know how much of that translates to voting, but because I don't know, no one's. It's just kind of one of those things where those are just concerns right now. We've had a complete breakdown of what is of morality in this country. We've had a breakdown of the family unit in this country, and it's a lot. It's very unnerving for a lot of families right now.
Yeah, and as a conservative, there are a lot of issues that I think people, just like you, people are a little surprised when you come at certain angles from certain directions. They're always a little surprised when I come at that topic and say I'm all for men in women's sports because I've always wanted to win at boxing and I think I still have a shot.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, because people made a lot of jokes, and I was part of that where I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm all for it as long as I can bet on it. But then you see a high school track athlete who's worked her butt off, got the grades, and then she loses her scholarship to a man who's just grew his hair out a little bit and said he's a woman. That I have a problem with that. And I think we need to start looking at setting up a charity fund or a scholarship fund for when this happens to especially young women athletes, that they step in, we're going to make sure you still get your opportunity to go to college and compete. I think, we need to
simplify it down. You don't want to make it about gender. It's easy. XY division, X division. That's it. You got XY, that's your division. You can wear whatever the hell you want and do your hair however you want, but you got XY, this is where you play.
See, Tyrus, this is why you're so much better at this than I am, because I made a joke and you were like, no, this is a time for levity. We're gonna talk about this issue for real.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where until you are affected by it and see it, when you see an 18-year-old crying because she's no longer has her scholarship because she was beaten by a boy that she never had a shot at beating. They're breaking records while they're doing this. So when you see that, and you think, man, how would that have been for me if we started letting, what if we started letting 30-year-old men go back and play high school football?
Yeah.
You know, 25 to 30, you want to go, you never played professional ball. You know what? You can come back and you can play high school ball. And then you've got 25 and 35-year-old men beating the hell out of 16 and 17, 18-year-old young boys and taking all their scholarships. How do you think that would go over?
Yeah, and you know what? I just have started. Like, you're right. When it becomes real, you go, oh, this is, like, not as big of a joke. It used to be a joke, and now it's local. Like, we're having these issues right here in St. Louis. We've got this fitness center. We've been talking about a guy going to the women's locker rooms. And now I've got a 10-year-old daughter, and I'm for the first time going, oh, wait a minute. Do I have to start thinking about that? Because it had always been kind of out there, but now it's here.
Yeah. But now it's in our communities. It's becoming it's really with the advertisement that you get from it in the argument. It also pushes a lot of people who do see like, wow, I could take advantage of this too. And we're seeing that where these failed male athletes or average or mediocre are suddenly becoming phenoms and they're getting encouraged to do it. In some cases, getting sponsorships. It's really, really in terms of what when we look at women's rights and equality, it's disgusting. And, you know, you can say you're a woman or whatever the hell you want to be. That's fine. It's America. But when your stuff interferes with other people's opportunities and it's unfair and there's nothing genetically that they can do about it other than, you know, women start taking testosterone and ruining their lives, it becomes a thing and something that is really fixable, and there's a reason why this wasn't allowed before, because we had morals and respect as a community, and those things are fading away. Now it's, you know, if a man is a provider and he's toxic, if a man opens a door for you, he's a monster. And this is all coming from these small groups who magnify themselves on social media and present themselves as big numbers, and for whatever reason, businesses were bending the knee to them, but we saw the results. Americans aren't going to stand out. Hardworking Americans don't have time to stand outside your door and protest and flip cars and stuff. We just don't buy your product anymore. And Bud Light found out, and they're still not where. I don't think they'll ever get back to where they were.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to happen. The consumer needs to say, you know what? I'm not good with this. I'm good.
Yeah, it's a real.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Lesson, I mean, that Bud Light thing, that really was a surprise to everybody. How long it's lasted, too. I mean, it's a year later. We're still talking about it. Tyrus, I always appreciate that you're here, that you're talking to us, but that you're also out there. You know, you're on Outkick. You've got stand-up specials. You're everywhere. So I just appreciate all the stuff you're doing.
Oh, yeah. You guys gave me one of my first opportunities, so you can't get rid of me.
Yeah, well, we won't. I'm glad that you're here, and you'll be here as long as we're here. So thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Tyrus, take care. This is the Annie Fry Show. Of course, Ryan Wiggins and Brad Range filling in for Annie today. Always appreciate getting to talk to Tyrus. One more time, our YouTube live chat poll today. Will there be any more large surprises before Election Day, yes or no? And then, you know, if you want to vote in that and also leave a comment and let us know if you think there are going to be big surprises, what you think those might be. Because, man, it really could be anything. Like to know what you think about this topic. It's the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll of the day. I almost said 126. This time check is sponsored by Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning, but I'm not going to do that because I'm hosting today. We'll be right back on the Andy Fry Show. Well, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden appeared together for the first time just now. We were talking about a little bit with Tyrus at the beginning there. I think what we want to do here, and this just ended, so we're almost not quite live, just a little behind. I think we're going to play Kamala's remarks. Now, I don't know how long we'll stay with this, but from what I got to hear, you know, right before Tyrus' call, we were kind of listening to this, and it sounded like she's got a script. But and she's playing the hits, like Brad just said. But she sounded like she was a little more loosey-goose about staying on script. So I'm a little interested to hear how this plays out. And if it's just the same thing, we'll cut away. But let's go to it and see what Kamala had to say.
Thank Judy for sharing her story. I think we all know it takes a very special person who has dedicated over 40 years of their life to do the work that Judy has done as a nurse, that work being what? To care about other people in a way that is about lifting them up and caring about their well-being. So, Judy, we thank you so very much for being here today. I want to recognize the incredible Governor Wes Moore. Wes, I'm so thankful to you for all that you do in service to our nation in so many different ways, and your friendship, but in particular, to share such a personal story as you have, and I know it takes a lot out of you to share that story, but to do it in a way that is about lifting up other people and helping, hopefully, others who are not in this room understanding how real people are impacted every day about this issue and by this issue. Thank you. I want to recognize the people of our administration, including Secretary Becerra, who is here. The bold administrator, Brooks Lesueur, who is here. My dear friend and former colleague, Senator Ben Cardin. Representative Barragan, the chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus.
Man, you know it's a bunch of insiders if they're cheering when you go, my administrative assistant is here. Wow.
And I want to recognize your next United States Senator, Angela. With her over the years, I'm telling you, Marilyn, you're going to do a great thing when you send her to the United States Senate. And of course, I could speak all afternoon about the person that I am standing on this stage with.
Man, they love him. Wonder why he dropped out.
That's a good question. I'm picturing all kinds of other people. Like, it's not Joe Biden that's standing next to her.
He's like down the line a
little
bit.
It's Gary Coleman.
Our extraordinary President Joe Biden. He's going to speak in a minute, but there's a lot of love in this room for our president. And I think it's for many, many reasons, including few leaders in our nation have done more on so many issues, including to expand access to affordable health care than Joe Biden. Today, we take the next step, thank you, Joe, forward in our fight.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe.
Joe's the best, isn't he? He's doing a great job.
What a guy. Like, those thank yous are because he got out of the race, right?
Yeah, I think so.
We here, we believe deeply. every senior in our nation should be able to live with security, stability, and dignity. And so in the United States of America, no senior should have to choose between either filling their prescription or paying their rent. That's the subject of today. Because we know for far too long, far too many of our seniors have struggled to afford their medication. And as a result, seniors have been forced to spend their time trying to figure out how they are going to be able to fill a prescription like insulin based on the doctor's prescription, which is about saving their life, or whether they'd have to ration their pills to be able to make it stretch through a month. And why, we all know, but let's ask, why are prescription drugs so expensive? I will tell you. Well, one big reason is for years, Big Pharma has often inflated the price of life-saving medications.
Now, hang on a second now. When the Democrats start talking about how they're taking on Big Pharma, I'm not sure that I can just allow that to go unchecked.
Are we going to fact check her?
I think we might. Here is, man, I didn't even know we were going to do this. Here's Donald Trump in 2020.
Today, I'm proud to announce that we have reached a breakthrough agreement to dramatically slash the out-of-pocket cost of insulin. You know what's happened to insulin over the years, right? Through the roof. Insulin. So many people. So necessary. For hundreds and thousands of seniors enrolled in Medicare, that's a big deal. Participating plans will cap cost at just $35 a month per type of insulin, and some plans may offer it free. So for everybody that's getting ripped off and paying tremendous prices, senior citizens, and Seema, I want to thank you because you brought this to my attention a long time ago, and you worked very hard on this day, and won't even cover it.
It sounds like Trump taking on Big Pharma. I don't know. Did Kamala, is she just adopting his policies? I don't know. We'll continue to listen.
Many times what it would cost to make just to increase their profits. And millions of Americans have suffered as a result. My entire career, I have worked to hold bad actors accountable and lower the cost of prescription drugs. As Attorney General of California, I took on pharmaceutical companies for deceptive marketing and illegally inflating the cost of drugs. And we won.
And I'm proud to say we forced you to take their products.
As a United States Senator, I fought to pass laws that would make health care more affordable and accessible for all Americans. And as Vice President, together with Joe Biden, our President, we finally addressed the longstanding issue that for years was one of the biggest challenges on this subject, which was that Medicare was prohibited by law from negotiating lower drug prices. And those costs then got passed on to our seniors, but not anymore. Yeah. 2 years ago, we gave Medicare the power to negotiate lower prescription drug prices for the first time in history. And here is why that matters. It is nearly impossible for a patient to negotiate lower prices by themselves. Just think about that. Somebody who needs the medication, who may be suffering from a serious illness, that they would by themselves be able to negotiate against a big drug company to lower that prices is virtually impossible. It's one person against a huge corporation. But Medicare represents more than 65 million people. And so Medicare has collective bargaining power. And now Medicare can use that power to go toe-to-toe with Big Pharma and negotiate lower drug prices.
It seemed like one point over the span of about a minute and a half. All right, we'll get another minute. Peace be with you. Also with you. Thank you, Joe. Hey, hang on. Trump had something to say about this yesterday.
Kamala and Joe tried to take credit for $35 insulin. You know that. You know who did that. I did that. I did that. I did the insulin.
I did the insulin. Here's another clip.
Kamala Harris won't end the economic crisis. She will only make it worse. And why hasn't she done it? She talks about it. She's doing a plan. You know, she's going to announce it this week, maybe. She's waiting for me to announce it so she can copy it.
I love all the problems that Kamala's going to solve in her next term. You're currently in power.
Yeah. Day one was January of 2020.
Day one was 4 years ago. Why did you do this already? Like, you're just taking these things on. We have a bold initiative that we forgot about up until this moment.
Until it meant that we were going to get reelected.
It's incredible. I think we're just going to leave that where it is. I would love to hear her. There was a point in there, but I don't want to listen to the next 5 minutes to get to this one point where she kind of talked she did the Kamala thing where she talked in circles. I mean, she just did it with Medicare,
yeah.
But it was a much bigger circle. She did one where she did a little circle logic, back on itself, that I don't want to listen to 5 more minutes to get to it, but we'll see if we can find it. This is the Annie Fry Show. We're going to break here and come right back and probably analyze this a little bit more, but man, we got a lot of sound from Trump yesterday. And it was pretty good. He's focused on the economy. I'm not really sure he should do anything else. If you just do that, dude, you're probably going to win. This is the Annie Fry Show. Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry.
You will never have had energy so low as you will under a certain gentleman known as Donald J. Trump. Have you heard of him? So we think your energy bills will be down by 50 to 70%. How good would that be for a thing called inflation? How good will that be?
Yeah, he talked about the economy yesterday quite a bit. I consumed that speech through clips, much in the same way that most of America does. I didn't watch it live. We try to watch those things live as much as we can. I just have a life that I'm also trying to live, so I had to consume it through clips. My electric bill, I talked about this about an hour ago in what usually would be Wiggins America. Annie is out today. I'm filling in. $422. I don't think I ever said that in that segment. $422 for one electric bill. And we're pretty, I don't want to say we're green energy, but we have a pretty efficient house. So we don't have real old windows or anything. Our house stays at the temperature it's supposed to be pretty well. And we're still spending over $400 a month. Man, I don't know what this winter is going to look like, because running the AC is one thing. Heating your house is more expensive. He's hitting a message there that if it gets out, you know, it's always a question, because he says a lot of things, and the things that you want to be the headline are usually not the headline. But if you could cut everybody's electricity prices by half, that's over $200 a month that would save me personally. That's a pretty big deal. And that's the thing about electricity and oil and the way that we create electricity. It's really not that hard to bring it down pretty quickly. So he's promising some things there that I'm not sure. And he even says, hey, if we get close, you'll give me credit, right? Because if we can get it to 50%, that'd be great. I'd love to get it to 70% down. But even if we didn't, you still will have voted for me and your prices will have come down at least. If it doesn't get to half, I'm not going to blame him. But it's not that hard to do this. Like Donald Trump, we sometimes think he's really, really great on the economy. He is. He knows money. He was talking to Elon Musk this week, listening to two guys who are very, very successful at business. I get a little bit jealous because I try to do, you know, some real estate and my own business stuff on the side. And you start to learn the language. And I said this on Tuesday, that when you hear guys talking who know the language of money, it actually gives me some more confidence, because politicians typically, and this isn't just Democrats, this is politicians. If you've lived your entire life and your entire career just doing politics, you've never really tried to run a business. You may have to run your own household finances, but if you get successful enough, your household finances are doing fine because you're making a lot of money. But those who know money, they know the language. It's just like if you talk to somebody who, and we've done this a lot recently with Tim Walz and the Stolen Valor stuff. When you talk to somebody who's not military about it, they might have an opinion. But when you talk to somebody who's former Marine, They're using the language to describe this stuff, and it goes a lot farther. When Donald Trump talks about the economy, it's so weird because you can tell that he knows money because he's done it, but he never really speaks on that kind of Elon Musk level that's a little bit harder to understand. Because some of the stuff he talks about, I don't even know what he's saying. But when Trump talks about it, I'm like, oh, okay, I know exactly what you're saying, because he makes it very, very accessible.
They say it's the most important subject. I think crime is right there. I think the border is right there, personally. We have a lot of important subjects because our country has become a third world nation. We literally are a third world nation. We're a banana republic in so many ways, and we're not going to let that happen because we're starting a free fall. But from today and from the day I take the oath of office, we will rapidly drive prices down and make America affordable again. We're going to make it affordable again.
That was the whole point of the speech yesterday, and it's so funny watching the headline. You almost can write the headline before the speech even happens. It'll say, Donald Trump does rambling, incoherent speech.
Yeah.
And you listen to the clips, and you're like, well, that didn't sound rambling.
Seems to make sense to me.
I mean, he jumps from subject to subject a lot because it's almost like stream of consciousness.
He definitely does a stream of consciousness thing, but his thoughts, and whenever he mentions something, it's a complete and coherent thought. He may jump from let's talk about energy to let's talk about the border, but whatever he says on energy, and then when he jumps to the border and then back to energy, each one of those are a self-contained, coherent thought. He's not rambling. It may be a little disorganized, but that's not rambling.
Yeah, he was intending to speak about the economy. Mm-hmm. And so the headlines I saw, or the criticism I saw, was, well, he just went off on all kinds of other topics again. Yeah, he definitely does that. He absolutely does that. Here's one of those.
And everything Kamala Harris touches turns bad. It all turns bad. San Francisco was a great city. Now it's unlivable. California was a great state. Now it's unlivable. She breaks everything just like she broke the border, broke our economy. But soon we are going to fix every single problem Kamala Harris and Joe Biden have created. And we are going to save our country. We are going to save America. We're going to save America.
I don't really think that was incoherent in any way. You can criticize Trump for a lot of things, but he makes points. You understand what he's saying. You know, the guy was a media personality for a long, long time. So it's not as if he's not pretty practiced at doing this. Whether you trust him or not, that's entirely up to you. But I do, based on experience. I mean, I think it was Jim Carafano said this week. You can actually look at this guy and say, I actually know what you're going to do because I've seen you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty rare for a candidate who's not currently in office.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, too, because until Joe Biden dropped out of the race, you could look at both candidates and say, well, I know what you're going to do because I watched you do it, which was, like you said, it's rare. There was only one other time in U.S. history that we've had a president that ran for office, was kicked out of office, and then ran for office and regained office again. I wish I could remember who it was off the top of my head. It's like late 1800s, mm-hmm. something like that. But the thing about it is the American people saw that and they said, no, we don't want the Joe Biden stuff. We saw what that was. Give us the Trump stuff. We saw what that was. We'll take that and you know, the whatever's beyond it. Now, the thing that Trump has to do is then show that, and Kamala Harris, by doing this rally with Joe Biden, shows that she's part of the Biden administration. So all you're going to get at best is Joe Biden policies with Kamala Harris at the helm. You're still going to get the same thing.
It's not going to be any different. In fact, she's, and the headlines today from the Fox News chyrons that I saw are that she's going to try to reposition herself and unapologetically reposition herself on some of these far left issues. Well, that just means you didn't really believe in them to start with. You're just going to be a chameleon, which is a very common nickname for her, Kamala Chameleon. But when I see friendly media like the Sacramento Bee, not the Babylon Bee, this is the Sacramento Bee, been around for a long time. It's a very left-leaning newspaper, trying to spin the economic message and failing this badly at it. then I know, you know, this is actually probably something Donald Trump does need to talk about. I'll read you from, it's called Reality Check. It's a series that the Sacramento Bee does where I guess they take a topic and they try to bring you the truth on it. I mean, you know, they cut through the BS and they bring you the truth. This one's about Kamala Harris's record on the economy. It says Donald Trump and fellow Republicans repeat it over and over. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are the reason prices are so high. Yes, they do say that. I would agree with that. It says, quote, Kamala, who cast a tie-breaking Senate vote for trillions in spending that sent inflation sky high, owns the failures of the Harris-Biden economy, quote unquote. The Republican Party rapid response team said that recently. Kamalanomics is Bidenomics, Trump's campaign team tweeted on Monday. Trump promised during the GOP convention last month that if he's elected, inflation will vanish completely. Here's where they make the turn, and they make their case for Kamala. Kamala doesn't have to do anything. Newspapers just do it. Chances are no president, or for that matter, any U.S. policymaker can make that happen. So it's not just defending her record. It's just saying, yeah, nobody really can do anything about this, though. Nobody's to blame.
Yeah.
While the Biden administration policies arguably contributed to the worst inflation in 40 years, they admit the American and world economies are complex and driven by several diverse, often uncontrollable factors. While that is true, it is important to recognize that they are saying, yes, they did contribute to it. Economists have different views of the impact of the Biden administration's policies. And so then they find some friendly economists to give them some quotes about how, well, yes, they did spend a lot. Yeah. Yes, they did cause a lot of this, but it's not just them. If that's the best argument your best writers can come up with, you're failing.
Well, even if it wasn't just them, the plan is, like, the ideal thing to do is recognize that spending too much is a bad thing and therefore don't keep doing it.
And I think maybe we as a nation have realized that. I'm not sure. You know what will determine if the nation has realized that is the election. There's a whole lot riding on this election that, man, I would love to get into. In fact, we probably will. I've got a whole bunch of material that we haven't gotten to today. Let's talk about what communists believe and maybe compare it to modern day Democrats. Does that sound like fun? Yeah, we'll do that next. This is the Andy Frey Show. I mean, yesterday quite a bit. I consumed that speech through clips, much in the same way that most of America does. I didn't watch it live. We try to watch those things live as much as we can. I just have a life that I'm also trying to live, so I had to consume it through clips. My electric bill, I talked about this about an hour ago in what usually would be Wiggins America. Annie is out today. I'm filling in. $422. I don't think I ever said that in that segment. $422 for one electric bill. And we're pretty, I don't want to say we're like green energy, but we have a pretty efficient house. So we don't have real old windows or anything. Our house stays at the temperature it's supposed to be pretty well. And we're still spending over $400 a month. Man, I don't know what this winter is going to look like, because running the AC is one thing. Heating your house is more expensive. He's hitting a message there that if it gets out, you know, it's always a question, because he says a lot of things, and the things that you want to be the headline are usually not the headline. But if you could cut everybody's electricity prices by half, that's over $200 a month that would save me personally. That's a pretty big deal. And that's the thing about electricity and oil and the way that we create electricity. It's really not that hard to bring it down pretty quickly. So he's promising some things there that I'm not sure. And he even says, hey, if we get close, you'll give me credit, right? Because if we can get it to 50%, that'd be great. I'd love to get it to 70% down. But even if we didn't, you still will have voted for me and your prices will have come down at least. If it doesn't get to half, I'm not going to blame him. But it's not that hard to do this. Like Donald Trump, we sometimes think he's really, really great on the economy. He is. He knows money. He was talking to Elon Musk this week, listening to two guys who are very, very successful at business. I get a little bit jealous because I try to do, you know, some real estate and my own business stuff on the side. And you start to learn the language. And I said this on Tuesday, that when you hear guys talking who know the language of money, it actually gives me some more confidence, because politicians typically, and this isn't just Democrats, this is politicians, if you've lived your entire life and your entire career just doing politics, you've never really tried to run a business, you may have to run your own household finances, but if you get successful enough, your household finances are doing fine because you're making a lot of money. But those who know money, they know the language. It's just like if you talk to somebody who, and we've done this a lot recently with Tim Walz and the Stolen Valor stuff. When you talk to somebody who's not military about it, they might have an opinion. But when you talk to somebody who's former Marine, they're using the language to describe this stuff, and it goes a lot farther. When Donald Trump talks about the economy, it's so weird because you can tell that he knows money because he's done it, but he never really speaks on that kind of Elon Musk level that's a little bit harder to understand. Because some of the stuff he talks about, I don't even know what he's saying. But when Trump talks about it, I'm like, oh, okay, I know exactly what you're saying, because he makes it very, very accessible.
They say it's the most important subject. I think crime is right there. I think the border is right there, personally. We have a lot of important subjects because our country has become a third world nation. We literally are a third world nation. We're a banana republic in so many ways, and we're not going to let that happen because we're starting a free fall. But from today and from the day I take the oath of office, we will rapidly drive prices down and make America affordable again. We're going to make it affordable again.
That was the whole point of the speech yesterday. And it's so funny watching the headline. You almost can write the headline before the speech even happens. It'll say Donald Trump does rambling, incoherent speech.
Yeah.
And you listen to the clips and you're like, well, sound rambling.
Seems to make sense to me.
I mean, he jumps from subject to subject a lot because it's almost like stream of consciousness.
He definitely does a stream of consciousness thing, but his thoughts, and whenever he mentions something, it's a complete and coherent thought. He may jump from let's talk about energy to let's talk about the border, but whatever he says on energy, and then when he jumps to the border and then back to energy, each one of those are a self-contained, coherent thought. He's not rambling. It may be a little disorganized, but that's not rambling.
Yeah, he was intending to speak about the economy. Mm-hmm. And so the headlines I saw, or the criticism I saw, was, well, he just went off on all kinds of other topics again. Yeah, he definitely does that. He absolutely does that. Here's one of those.
And everything Kamala Harris touches turns bad. It all turns bad. San Francisco was a great city. Now it's unlivable. California was a great state. Now it's unlivable. She breaks everything just like she broke the border, broke our economy. But soon we are going to fix every single problem Kamala Harris and Joe Biden have created. And we are going to save our country. We are going to save America. We're going to save America.
I don't really think that that was incoherent in any way. You can criticize Trump for a lot of things, but he makes points. You understand what he's saying. You know, the guy was a media personality for a long, long time. So it's not as if he's not pretty practiced at doing this. Whether you trust him or not, that's entirely up to you. But I do, based on experience. I mean, I think it was Jim Carafano said this week. You can actually look at this guy and say, I actually know what you're going to do because I've seen you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty rare for a candidate who's not currently in office.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, too, because until Joe Biden dropped out of the race, you could look at both candidates and say, well, I know what you're going to do because I watched you do it, which was, like you said, it's rare. There was only one other time in U.S. history that we've had a president that ran for office, was kicked out of office, and then ran for office and regained office again. I wish I could remember who it was off the top of my head. It's like late 1800s, mm-hmm. something like that. But the thing about it is the American people saw that and they said, no, we don't want the Joe Biden stuff. We saw what that was. Give us the Trump stuff. We saw what that was. We'll take that and you know, the whatever's beyond it. Now, the thing that Trump has to do is then show that, and Kamala Harris, by doing this rally with Joe Biden, shows that she's part of the Biden administration. So all you're going to get at best is Joe Biden policies with Kamala Harris at the helm. You're still going to get the same thing.
It's not going to be any different. In fact, she's, and the headlines today from the Fox News chyrons that I saw are that she's going to try to reposition herself and unapologetically reposition herself on some of these far left issues. Well, that just means you didn't really believe in them. To start with, you're just going to be a chameleon, which is a very common nickname for her, Kamala Chameleon. But when I see friendly media like the Sacramento Bee, not the Babylon Bee, this is the Sacramento Bee, been around for a long time. It's a very left-leaning newspaper, trying to spin the economic message and failing this badly at it, then I know, you know, this is actually probably something Donald Trump does need to talk about. I'll read you from, it's called Reality Check. It's a series that the Sacramento Bee does where I guess they take a topic and they try to bring you the truth on it. I mean, you know, they cut through the BS and they bring you the truth. This one's about Kamala Harris's record on the economy. It says Donald Trump and fellow Republicans repeat it over and over. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are the reason prices are so high. Yes, they do say that. I would agree with that. It says, quote, Kamala, who cast a tie-breaking Senate vote for trillions in spending that sent inflation sky high, owns the failures of the Harris-Biden economy, quote unquote. The Republican Party Rapid Response Team said that recently. Kamalanomics is Bidenomics, Trump's campaign team tweeted on Monday. Trump promised during the GOP convention last month that if he's elected, inflation will vanish completely. Here's where they make the turn, and they make their case for Kamala. Kamala doesn't have to do anything. Newspapers just do it. Chances are no president, or for that matter, any U.S. policymaker can make that happen. So it's not just defending her record. It's just saying, yeah, nobody really can do anything about this, though. Nobody's to blame.
Yeah.
While the Biden administration policies arguably contributed to the worst inflation in 40 years, they admit the American and world economies are complex and driven by several diverse, often uncontrollable factors. While that is true, it is important to recognize that they are saying, yes, they did contribute to it. Economists have different views of the impact of the Biden administration's policies. And so then they find some friendly economists to give them some quotes about how, well, yes, they did spend a lot. Yeah. Yes, they did cause a lot of this, but it's not just them. If that's the best argument your best writers can come up with, you're failing.
Well, even if it wasn't just them, the plan is, like, the ideal thing to do is recognize that spending too much is a bad thing and therefore don't keep doing it.
And I think maybe we as a nation have realized that. I'm not sure. You know what will determine if the nation has realized that is the election. there's a whole lot riding on this election that, man, I would love to get into. In fact, we probably will. I've got a whole bunch of material that we haven't gotten to today. Let's talk about what communists believe and maybe compare it to modern day Democrats. Does that sound like fun? Yeah, we'll do that next. This is the Andy Frey Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.